Well, the housing crisis is here, but it looks different than we might have expected, and it looks a lot different than 2007-2008. Hey, everyone, I'm Clayton Morris. Welcome into the Investing in Real Estate show. On this show, we aim to make you a more intelligent real estate investor. We're going to get to some of your questions. You're able to call in and leave us a voicemail question. We'll get to three of your questions on today's show. But first, I wanted to give you some market update news, specifically on a new report out from Bloomberg that just came out yesterday on the housing crisis and how 9 million millennials have now moved back in with their parents this year. Unbelievable numbers. So this is, you know, the good news is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they say that these people still have jobs, but I don't really believe that. I really don't. I think the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, is full of BS, as we have seen repeatedly. And we are going to see massive amounts of layoffs in the beginning of this year. We are already seeing it. I was sitting down with an economist this past week who said, Clayton, people don't realize how bad this is going to get. It is going to be bad. So as real estate investors, what can we learn from this? What can we learn from millions of millennials moving back home? Well, we can learn that rent is too high in a lot of these bubble markets, specifically Miami, where a short time ago, people were paying $200 to $2,500 a month for rent. Now the rent is upwards of $5,000 or even $6,000 a month. That's unsustainable. That's unsustainable in some of these markets, right? Specifically in Miami and San Francisco and other bubble markets, New York City and places like that. So that's not where I invest. So what do I take away from that? Well, I look at where I invest as areas that have been recession resistant because the rents have remained stable. The jobs have remained stable in healthcare, university jobs. These are not really affected by what we're seeing in the broader recession. Also, the same is true of the oil industry, the demand. So where we're investing in West Texas and those types of places, again, we have a multiple section of jobs, and therefore we can be really insulated from that. One thing that we have noticed is housing prices have fallen flat for the third straight month. So housing prices are down. We just did a whole video here on the show about savvy investors are buying right now. It's new investors who are scared because they're thinking, oh, I'm going to wait till a housing crash and then I'll buy. But it's not going to look the same. It's certainly not going to have, like, it might crash in Miami, but why would you want to invest in that kind of a bubble market? So the areas where we do invest, because all the demographics and all of the economic data makes sense, you're not going to see, in my opinion, you're not going to see a big crash or of any kind. Again, we've seen prices flattened on housing prices, which is a perfect time for someone to buy a property and get time in the market as opposed to waiting and thinking that something's going to happen next year. Now, what might happen next year? Well, no one has a crystal ball. I mean, you're just going off of data that we're seeing, right? No one's going to say exactly what's going to happen, but I've been telling you now for weeks on this show that we are going to see a lot of layoffs in the beginning of the year. A lot of companies that are just sitting on capital right now that didn't hire people, that didn't invest in new infrastructure. You have like a lot of oil companies that are sitting on money that they got, cheap money from the government, and they didn't expand, didn't do research and development expansion, didn't hire additional people. And so you have a lot of other companies that have been buying back up their shares of stock, et cetera. In the meantime, laying off a lot of people. So this is what we're seeing. So according to Bloomberg, about one in four millennials now living with their parents, according to the survey of 1,200 people that was just put out by propertymanagement.com. That's equivalent to about 18 million people between the ages of 26 and 41 years old moving back home. About 15% of millennials renters say that they're spending more than half of their after-tax income on rent. More than half of their after-tax income on rent. Now, what do we take away from this as a real estate investor? Well, I don't want to be investing in markets where someone has to spend more than half of their rent to live in one of my properties. So if you don't have a property like that, like we don't, where we invest, we want our renters to be able to, you know, the old rule is no more than 25% of your take-home pay should be invested in rent, right? That's the old rule. Well, we are in areas that's the case, where our tenants are able to live comfortably, have a great job, and not have to worry about this craziness. So again, as an investor, are you investing in markets where you may have a tenant say, I'm going to move back in with mom and dad, financial hardships forced millions of young adults, I'm looking at the graph now, to move in with their parents this year. The number one reason, they say, according to this new data, is to save money. 50% of them just say they're just, all of their money is going to rent. They said 39% of them said to save, 50% said to save money. 39% said, I couldn't afford the rent. 31% said, I couldn't take care of them. They couldn't take care of it. I like living with my parents, they said. Personal health issues, 22%. And 21% said I lost my job. So 21% of them did lose their job. Now, this, you know, the disruptions of the pandemic, which triggered massive job losses, as well as a spike in houses, have driven unprecedented shakeup in living arrangements right now. A survey by Pew found that for the first time since the Great Depression, a majority of Americans between the ages of 18 and 29 are living with their parents. And good that we're sending $100 billion off to Ukraine to shore up their energy infrastructure and their housing. But the United States looks like this right now. So this is the housing crisis. It just is not looking the same. You know, interest rates hopefully are now moderating and starting to come back down. So that's good. People still can't get mortgages because banking regulations, and it's way more strict to get a mortgage right now. All of that is true. So where is the housing crisis then? It's all of these incredibly high rents that are forcing people out who can't afford it. And now baby boomers are moving into these apartments. So people who wanted to live more downtown, maybe the older generation who wants to kind of be where the action is, they're buying these properties or moving in and renting these properties. And these younger kids are having to move back home with mom and dad. So you're seeing a very odd shift right now. We're going to keep our eyes on this market, guys, because I think over the next couple of weeks, it's going to get very, very interesting, very disturbing once we see what happens with the U.S. dollar and once we see what happens with layoffs. All right, we've got a couple of questions I wanted to take on today's show. Our first question here is up right now. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Elliot. I'm looking to invest in real estate, and I currently have a mortgage, about $70,000 left on it, as well as student loans totaling around $100,000. Just wanted to get your perspective on, as far as the strategy using the HELOC strategy, when do you focus on paying down the student loan versus paying down a mortgage? And how does that factor in with buying rental properties using the HELOC method? Thanks.
Thanks so much, Elliot. Great question. I often say on this show, you know, I'm not a financial advisor. I can't tell you how to spend your money. I can only tell you what I would do personally in that situation. And frankly, it's what I did. I had a lot of credit card debt. I also had a primary house that I lived in, and I got a home equity line of credit. Now, what I did was we wrote a whole book about this. So you can find it on Amazon. It's by me and my wife. You can listen to it on Audible. I do the voice version of it on Audible if you'd like to listen to that. It's called How to Pay Off Your Mortgage in 5 Years. Now, the strategy we talk about in that book is about using a home equity line of credit. That's one of the strategies we talk about. And again, you're just trading one financial product for another. That's all you're doing. So if your student loans have a high interest rate of like 18, 19%, which I doubt that they do, then you're going to want to figure out how you can find another product to offset that, something where you're paying way less in interest rates. But most of the time, student loans are going to be near 0% or 1% interest, something very, very low. So do you really care that you've got these student loans that are hanging out there that you only pay 1% interest on? Again, when I had a lot of credit card debt, I focused way more on my credit card debt, paying down the $75,000 in debt that I had on my credit cards versus the $11,000 or $15,000 that I had on student loans from the University of Pittsburgh. And so because I had it was like very low interest rate, it was almost 0% interest. It was so low. So I focused on the credit cards. That was my personal take on it. And then I eventually, once I was making enough money, I wrote a check and just paid off the whole student loans at one point. So what I would personally do if this were my situation, if I've got equity in the house that I live in, okay, you only owe $70,000 more, how much equity do you have? Can you get a home equity line of credit? And the answer is always yes. Get a home equity line of credit, even if you don't use it. Okay, you get a home equity line of credit that you can use for up to 10 years is usually what the length of them is. And you can start to decide yourself, are you going to put a little bit towards paying down the primary mortgage So you eliminate that $70,000 balance. And again, we talk about this in the book. What I did was I did it halfway. I did focused on paying down the mortgage half, and the other half I used to invest in real estate and buy properties. So like one of our properties at Morris Invest, the down payment amount, it's going to be about $50,000. Then we finance the rest of that. So could you use a home equity line of credit to pay down your primary balance and also put about $50,000 into a cash flowing net asset rental property that you now are adding assets? Because right now, the only asset you have is your home, and that's not a performing asset, right, Elliot? So how can I use that asset that I'm living in, turn that money, that equity, you can't eat equity, turn that into a performing asset? And now you're getting the cash flow and the tax benefits. And so that's the way I did it. Again, I can't tell you how to do it yourself, but I paid down my rent or paid down my primary mortgage while at the same time buying rental properties. That was my strategy. And it worked well for me. Now, all I can say is it worked well for me. And we wrote a whole book on that strategy. So Elliot, I hope you find this useful. All right, our next question.
Good morning. My name is Marcio, and I want to start this audio recording by congratulating you on the Speak Now functionality. This is really cool. I never seen this before on any, education program or anyone that deals with investing. So congratulations. My question, actually not so much of a question, it's more like a problem that I have is raising funds to scale my real estate business. So I do have a little bit of experience. I've been doing this for 5 years. And I managed to acquire a 11-unit multifamily. I have a couple single family myself, but I've done it all using essentially my own money. Okay, I cannot scale my real estate business anymore. And I've tried pretty much everything, like private capital, banks, and it seems that I have this constant problem on finding money. But I guess that the question would be how can I find capital to scale my real estate business? This seems to be a fundamental problem for me, and I could use some help.
Thank you, Marcio. I appreciate it. And thank you for the compliment here on the show. I love being able to have these conversations. That's why we started this Q&A part of the show, so I can hear from real investors who are struggling with different questions. So thank you for that. So it's an interesting question, right? And I think you might be asking the wrong question. I'm just going to throw this out there, because I will always say, and this is absolutely the case, that money always comes to good deals. Always, always. There is so much money sitting on the sidelines. First of all, right now, people are looking to invest in real estate. This is one of the best times to invest in real estate. So if you've got a smart real estate investor sitting on the sidelines right now, they want to deploy capital in investments that they can get in on right now, maybe slightly cheaper than normal. Okay. And investors are looking to buy commodities right now. So this is a perfect time. So again, money always flows to a good deal. So number one, Marcio, I would absolutely recommend you read Susan Lasseter Lyons, her book called Getting the Money. It's a great book. She's been a guest on the show. She's a friend of the show. She's considered the billion-dollar woman from the amount of deals and structure she's put together. She will walk you through step by step by step how to put together a package to present to investors so that they can invest. Read that book. It's dense, but it's got, I'm telling you, it's like a Bible for getting the money. So just, I'm not going to say anything more about it. Go read that book, okay? And walk through that process. I think she even has a new updated version of the book for Getting the Money. So go check that out. Getting the Money by Susan Lasseter Lyons. Okay. Next piece of this is, I think, again, you're asking the wrong question, because it doesn't sound, or you didn't talk about a new deal that you're struggling to get capital on. So you're talking about scaling it sounds like you're really into the multifamily space. I am not a multifamily investor. I see greater value in the residential retail space. And frankly, a lot of the larger hedge funds now are moving away from the larger, because more and more people are moving out of the cities. And so they're looking to be more involved in owning townhomes or duplexes and residential buildings and residential properties. So you might want to consider that. And our team can help you with that. We've got all the financing and all of that built in. So we've got all the funding built in at Morris Invest. If you're interested in that, we can help you with that. You know, but no pressure. If you're not interested in residential, then that's fine. But that's what we do. But you can at least book a call with our team. We'd be happy to kind of talk with you through some of those strategies for free and maybe point you in the right direction. But the other piece of this is, Marcio, is like, if you have a property, if you have a piece of real estate that's a good deal and you package it up correctly and you present it at a local real estate meetup group or just through local investors, then the money will flow to you. It will come out of the woodwork for a good deal. So I guess what I'm asking is, do you have a good deal? I'm being frank, and I'm not being mean about it, but just, you know, what does the deal look like? Do you even have a deal yet? People want to see a deal before the money flows. That's just frankly how it goes. So I come back to this. There are three things that you need to be a real estate investor: money, people, and a deal. If you don't have money, then you need the people and the deal. Okay. So if you've got a good deal that you found and the numbers make sense and you can bring on additional investors, then you just need to find the people, right? And then the money will flow. And so how do you find the people? Well, meetup.com is a great way to do that. Now that everyone's out of the pandemic, everyone's getting together again and doing real estate meetup groups. So look for a local real estate meetup group in your area. They're called REIA meetings, R-E-I-A. So go to meetup.com and just search for local REIA meetings in your neighborhood. And then go. Bring your package, your presentation, and meet with investors who are in that room. You're going to find people who have money who want to invest. And you can probably get up in front of those people and say, here's the property I have. It's a 4-unit or it's a 10-unit and I need funding. Here's the benefits. Here are the numbers. But I'm looking for additional investors. If anyone's interested or can point me in the right direction, I'd love to meet with you about the deal. That's how you do it. That's how I've done it. And that's how Susan will teach you in that book. So hopefully I've given you some things to think about here. The point is you didn't mention a deal to me, which makes me think that you're looking for funding, but you don't have a deal yet. So that's where I think maybe the disconnect is. Investors want to see the deal, unless you're friends with them. You know, they want to see the numbers on a piece of paper, and that's where then the money will flow. Excuse me. Then the money will flow. You don't have to worry about that. All right. Next question from Austin.
Hi, Clayton. Austin here from California. For HELOCs, I was wondering what's better, a longer draw period or a longer repayment period? Because I know that the most popular terms are 10-year draw and 20-year repayment, but there are also banks that will do 15-year draw and then 15-year repayment. So I was just wondering which one is best. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Austin. It really is a personal preference, and it depends on your interest rate, right? So again, I can't tell you which one to pick. I've only ever had 10 years. Those are the ones that I've used, the 10-year draws. That's been this, you know, in my history. I've never actually even seen a 15-year. But if you get a 15-year, great, go with it if you want, if that makes sense for you. To me, it all comes down to the interest rate. So again, if you're getting an interest rate that you're locked in at a higher number for 15 years, then you're locked into that number for that amount of time. Why not stick with something that you could revise and maybe, you know, shake things up in 10 years? Most of the time, though, I mean, you know, I don't even ever make it that far in some of those. I've never made it to the 10-year threshold. I've either moved or I've sold the property. And so, you know, it's one of those things where I think the longest I ever got on one was like 4 years, maybe three or four years. And then I sold it anyway. And we moved, we were young, so we were upgrading our home, moving, you know, we had an additional baby. And so things to think about, just think about the interest rate. Really, it just comes down to interest rate. As long as the terms are the same, the only thing that's different is you're getting a 15-year instead of a 10-year. If you plan to not move, if you plan to stay in that same location where you are, then you might want to consider a 15-year because things change all the time in the banking sector. They could get rid of home equity lines of credit down the line. And you might be grandfathered in because you have one. You know, that's something to consider. 8 years from now, they might eliminate them. And now you've got another 7 years to go because you went for the 15-year. So again, it really just comes down to me, to interest rates, and are you going to move? Because things could change, interest rates could drop in a year or two. You might consider closing it out and opening a new one. To me personally, I think you might be worried about something that's not ever going to even come to fruition. You know, people are moving all the time these days. I don't see you running up against that timetable, Austin, but that's fantastic that you found a good home equity line of credit and a choice, because to me, a home equity line of credit is a great way to start building wealth. Great way to start buying investment properties. I think a majority of our clients at Morris Invest use a home equity line of credit to make their first purchase on a rental property with us, one of our new construction properties. So it's a great strategy, one of my favorite. So thank you guys so much for joining us today. Hope we did cover a lot of ground. I hope you found it useful. You can always book a call with our team by going to morrisinvest.com. And when you're on that website, you'll notice there's a microphone icon on the right side of your screen. Click that and you can leave us a 30-second voicemail question here that we will answer on this show. Until next time, everyone, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. I believe it's the number one way to build wealth. We'll see you next time.